Good afternoon, you're very welcome to today's edition of Saturday with Claire Byrne. On today's programme, can and will Donald Trump wrestle our multinationals back to the United States? The row at Bus Éireann intensifies and threatens to engulf all public transport services. Is Ireland flexing enough muscle at the Brexit table as the stakes are raised? And challenges for Sinn Féin in the post-Martin McGuinness era. All of that to come, but first it's time for the news now with John Finnerty.
Claire.
John, thank you very much. This is Saturday with Claire Byrne and you're very welcome to the programme. We'd like to get to hear from you over the course of the next hour. You can get in touch by text. 51551 is the number. The email address is saturday@rte.ie and the Twitter address is @SaturdayRTE. We're going to start today with a clip that represents what happened yesterday in the United States and much of what went before. This was the opening sequence on the BBC's Newsnight last night.
Donald Trump has been saying that he will run for president as a Republican, which is surprising since I just assumed he was running as a joke.
Donald Trump, just last week, he confirmed to the National Review that he is again considering a run in 2016.
Do it. Do it. Look at me. Do it. I will personally write you a campaign check now. On behalf of this country, which does not want you to be president, but which badly wants you to run.
We are, and which Republican candidate has the best chance of winning the general election?
Of the declared ones right now, Donald Trump.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
That I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
He's not going to be President of the United States.
And will, to the best of my ability,
Donald Trump will never be elected President of the United States.
Preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
There you go. It's extraordinary. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But first, let me introduce our panel today. We've Sean Canny, Independent TD and Minister of State, Jim O'Callaghan, Fianna Fáil TD and Justice Spokesperson, Louise O'Reilly, Sinn Féin TD and Health Spokesperson, John Downing, Political Correspondent with the Irish Independent, Eddie Malloy, Change Management Consultant, and we also have Dermot O'Leary, who's General Secretary of the National Bus and Rail Workers Union. And we start with President Donald Trump, inaugurated yesterday, while today hundreds of thousands of women take to the streets in protest against him, both in the United States and elsewhere in the world, including in Ireland, where there are marches happening in Dublin, Galway and Cork this lunchtime. But let's be selfish about all of this and listen to the piece or the part of the inauguration speech that just might impact us.
Every decision on trade, on taxes, on immigration, on foreign affairs will be made to benefit American workers and American families. We must protect our borders from the ravages of other countries making our products, stealing our companies, and destroying our jobs.
So, how seriously should we take that? John, I'm going to start with you, John Downing. You were writing about this today. Should we be concerned? That commitment has been made before.
Yeah, and Irish officials always say in all presidential elections we hear this rhetoric and it goes on and then it fades away. That's what we were told during the Trump campaign. But I think Trump is going to try to govern as he campaigned. Certainly his speech yesterday, disgraceful and all as it was.
Why do you think so?
Pardon?
Why do you think it was disgraceful?
Oh, it completely lacked vision. It was boorish. It was a stump speech. It was a campaign speech. There was nothing presidential about it whatsoever. But I think the point is, we assumed forever that he was a joke this time last year, as you're opening the stuff you played from BBC just now. It went on through the year. He was the guy who couldn't possibly win. He has won. And I think we should begin to take him more and more at face value. Now, I appreciate it's not easy to just lug all of the multinational or even a chunk of the multinationals that we have out of Ireland. And it's not as mobile as you think. And there is a very strong impulsion among American business to be present globally. And our Ireland is very important strategically for the EU. All of that being said, I believe he could at very least impede expansion here, impede renewal of jobs which are falling off, and we need new inward investment. I believe we should begin to take this very seriously.
Sean Canney, should we be worried?
Well, I suppose the first thing, just following on from what John said, we now have the fact that he is President Trump. He's in there. He's the man leading the posse in the USA. He has said what he said yesterday. Of course, there are threats. There are challenges there. I think a lot of the multinational companies need to have a focus in Europe and all around the world. So if I was the CEO of one of these companies, I would be looking at how I can develop my business. And I think that from our point of view, as Ireland and as the government, we need to keep promoting, and we need to keep showing that how Ireland can benefit these companies. And I think at the end of the day, the companies will be looking at the bottom lines, and they will be looking at policies. But
if they're looking at the bottom line and he reduces corporation tax to 15%, it's a fairly easy decision, isn't it?
Well, not necessarily. If you're a CEO of a company and you're trying to trade globally, you need to have locations around the world where you can do business. And for instance, the European Union...
Possibly not on the scale that they have now.
Well, possibly not on the scale. There is that's why I'm saying there's a challenge there. But I think we have to just make sure that we have good relations with America from now on. And we have to make sure that we are in dialogue and show how we can actually benefit these companies without actually... We're not robbing America. We're not. And that's what he said. We're not stealing anything from America.
He thinks we are.
And I think that when you look at it, that what we are doing is we're creating a huge platform for these companies to develop and create jobs, and also to generate profits for these companies. And I think even more so with the Brexit situation, that Ireland as an English-speaking nation is there. And okay, I think it will be very important going forward. But it is a challenge.
We'll come to Brexit in a moment. Yeah. Jim O'Callaghan, if I could just turn to you on this. All of this plays into how we deal with President Trump now, given what Enda Kenny has said about him in the past. Do we now cozy up, buddy up to him, try and be his best friend and work with him?
Well, I think it's important to recognise that this is an extraordinary story. In centuries from now, people will be talking about President Trump, how he was elected. He was regarded as being a joke. He's now the President of the United States. He's in office one day, and he will be judged by us on the basis of his presidential record, what he does. I think it's very important that we don't panic. The American political system is a complex political system. Although he's the most powerful politician in America, there is a system there of checks and balances. He is a person who is owed no loyalty by the elected representatives of the Congress and the Senate. Republicans, and in the American context, don't owe him any loyalty. So he's got a vulnerability there. He's never been told no, probably in his personal life or in his political life. But he is going to find situations where he wants to do things in American politics and he won't be able to do it because the Congress won't allow him. But I don't think it's a time for us to panic. I think we've had strong and lengthy and healthy relationships with America for many years, and we will after President Trump is no longer president. And there's no reason why we shouldn't continue to have good relationships with America whilst he is president. And if you look at foreign direct investment...
You think he's going to have to moderate?
Of course he's going to have to moderate. But in terms of the interest of this country and foreign direct investment, like companies such as Apple are here for reasons not simply to do with tax. I know a lot of people came here for tax, but they have deep roots here. They're here for our education system. They're here now more than ever because we will have access to the single market when Britain won't have access to the single market. We're the only English-speaking country that will. There are very many reasons why they want to be here. Let us not panic about it, and let us judge him on his record as opposed to what our fears are.
But should we not prepare for the fact that companies like Apple may be penalised for being here?
Well, there'll be
by the United States.
That's a matter of American policy. What his plan appears to be, and it may be a success, he is going to offer incentives to American companies around the world to repatriate their profits in America. They may do that. That will result in considerable amount of monies being available to the American government, which he may use in building roads and building bridges. And if he sticks to that type of a programme, he could do okay.
Okay, John in Limerick has an interesting view. He says Trump's speech in terms of trade was clearly aimed at China. Rebalancing that trade relation is at the centre of his policy. Ireland will not be adversely affected. Eddie Malloy, what's your view?
Yeah, Claire, I think he underestimates the mentality of multinational companies. Mm. Multinational companies do not exist to create jobs anywhere. If they don't put America first, it's shareholders first. And the multinational base in Ireland, for example, Intel would have about 5 billion sunk in the ground out in Leixlip. That's not going to be moved in 4 or 5 years. And also the money that's floating around the world, the 13 billion, for example, that Apple have put into an account in relation to Ireland, I mean, that money is not being spent in Ireland. In other words, that money is just floating there in an account. So I think that the other thing I'd say about Trump and who he wants to influence, I think he made a lot of enemies yesterday. He insulted the whole political establishment in Washington. And also he insulted those who do create wealth in America by describing them as creating carnage and so on around the country. So and most of those people are supporters of the Republican Party, as Jim says. He doesn't have them to support him where he's going from. So I think also that the fact that the UK is leaving means that Ireland is in a much better position to attract investment from US multinationals that might otherwise have gone into Scotland and Wales, for example,
okay,
who compete with Ireland.
We can't legislate for that because we just don't know what he's going to do.
And I think they'll see him off the premises, frankly, before he really has the kind of effect he's claiming he will have. Look at the difficulty.
You think he's not going to survive the 4 years?
Probably not. I think that if he does survive the 4 years, in 8 years, Obama set out to do things, for example, gun control and various other things, and he found it impossible because of what Jim says are the checks and balances in the system. He can't just railroad through this dream he has of bringing jobs back. And also, you can't go into places like Pennsylvania and Ohio and create a high-tech company in cities like Warren, Ohio, and these other places, which are Rust Belt companies. It's totally, he's misleading the people who he says he's championing. You know?
We're going to leave this shortly, but Louise, I want to come back to how we deal with him now. Do we stay on side? Should Enda Kenny go over for St. Patrick's Day if he's invited?
He is the elected president of the US. That is a fact. They voted. But I don't think that by exchanging the shamrock, a ceremony which I personally find a little bit cringy by times, but that's not to say that all of the work that goes on around that is incredibly important and that must continue. I listened to Trump's speech yesterday. I had just pulled into the car park in the pavilions in Swords, and I, as I listened, I noticed a lot of other people where I was going in to do my shopping, and I waited and I had the window down a little bit, and there were a lot of people doing the exact same thing. So people are interested. But as I looked around the cars and I was thinking to myself, I wonder how many of those people have family that are undocumented and living in the States. I mean, there's a huge job of work to be done, and that's what the Taoiseach needs to concentrate on when he goes over in March. He needs to put those people to the fore, and he also needs to make it very, very clear to President Trump, we have good relations with the US and we treat their companies very well over here, some would say too well, but they're not the companies are not just here for one reason, they're here for a whole range of reasons. And I do think as time goes on that President Trump is going to find that while he has a very powerful position, he is not going to get his way in all things. I was quite shocked by the speech. The speech was a campaign speech. It was not the speech that I don't believe very many other people were expecting to hear. I don't think we should dispense with our relationship with the US because we don't like or approve of some of the things that their leader has said. We have no choice but to respect the fact that he was democratically elected. He is the president of the United States. We are in the President Trump era. And while that might be shocking to a lot of people, the Taoiseach needs to deal with that because that is the reality.
OK, we'll leave that one there. We're going to take a break and then we're going to talk about the very serious situation at Bus Éireann, which may spread to other public transport sectors. So 6 million a year, that's the amount of money Bus Éireann, we are told, is losing every single year. And solving the problem, according to management, might involve redundancies, cuts to premium payments, allowances and overtime rates. Dermot O'Leary, General Secretary of the National Bus and Rail Workers Union, is here now. What's the state of play? There's been no official talk. You were made an offer by management You're smiling at me now, and you've said to them you're not even going to discuss it with them.
Well, look, an offer is an inappropriate word in relation to what was in the correspondence sent to us on Wednesday. It's quite disgraceful in actual fact. And again, I suppose in your intro you described premium payments and cuts to overtime. I mean, the fact of the matter is that bus drivers rely on overtime as part of their salary. They pay their mortgages and pay their bills out of that salary, and there's cuts of up to 30% involved in this so-called plan.
That'd be the bottom line, you believe, for your work.
In fact, it will. But I mean, look, the issue here is soaked in politics, obviously. It's soaked in policy decisions made by government and by the Department of Transport. And there's an attempt here, obviously, to put the situation into the industrial relations arena and isolate or protect, I should say, the government and the department and indeed the National Transport Authority from the role they had to play or are playing in the crisis at Bus Éireann. And in fact, even only as recently as last night, I read in the Times Online where the headline was that Bus Éireann wanted to go to the Labour Court. And again, I suppose I need to nail this once and for all. The Labour Court sat on the 6th of December in relation to a pay claim, a long overdue pay rise for 8 years since the last one, 9 years this year. And the Labour Court couldn't assist the parties. That was the language they used, because Bus Éireann would not engage. And what the Labour Court said, very briefly, the Labour Court said that they were available to meet the parties if the parties decided to come back on the pay claim only, not on anything else. Now, people in the company these days, the new management structure, obviously don't know how industrial relations works. The first instance, you have internal discussions. Obviously, we won't go to those based on that letter they sent us. Second of all, you go to the WRC and then you might go to the Labour Court. So the Labour Court is not an option for us in this regard. In terms of government policy...
So what happens next then?
Well, what happens next is that Bus Éireann...
According
to Bus Éireann, in under orders from the Department of Transport, we'll obviously write to staff, I assume, next week, because we won't go to any meeting, and we'll be telling them that they're going to cut their pay at such a time, in maybe probably in February, and that will trigger industrial action across five trade unions, in actual fact. But the point here...
And you've said that will spread outside, beyond...
Well, what I reflected was that there's anger across the CIE group. It's a family, obviously, three companies under the one umbrella. It will spread, not by my hand, if you like. I can't tell Irish Rail people or Dublin Bus people to go on strike, they're not in dispute with their employer. But unfortunately, I can't stop people being angry. But the important point here is government policy. Saturating a new market of motorways with competitors paying low wages, treating the workers badly, is not a transport system that the people in this country either want, because ultimately they'll end up paying higher fares. That's what happened in the UK. That's what will happen here as well.
Okay. Bus Éireann, Sean Canny, is a basket case. What do you say to that?
Well, I wouldn't say Bus Éireann is a basket case, but there is a particular problem with the expressway. And the facts are the facts. It is losing 6 million per annum. And that hemorrhage of money is threatening the whole of the Bus Éireann service. There are issues there that need to be resolved. I would say that, first of all, this is not the expressway is not a service that receives subvention. It's a competitive run that's been done, expressway, competing with the private sector. The government can't subsidise it. First of all, that's a fact. The second thing I want to say
But yet it's expected to give 1.2 million people who have travel passes, free travel. So that's, it's very difficult for them to compete on a level playing field.
Can I just finish what I was going to say now, please? I didn't interrupt you or the German.
No, Sean, I will interrupt you.
This is not a policy issue. This is an issue
of how it
is managed. If we continue to lose money on a service, we have to look at it. The Grant Thornton report is a report. It's up to the Bus Éireann management now
and
to reflect on
transport.
That and the unions
and the
to look at how best to deal with this. And I would hope that at the end of the day, what we want to do is we want to protect Bus Éireann. I don't want to see any of the routes that affect rural areas being taken out. And if they are, I want to see connectivity being retained. But what I would say to Dermot, and I would say to everybody involved in the thing, that, we can discuss this on the airways for as long as we like, but what we need to do is we need to sit down in a manner.
Does that include the Minister for Transport?
At this, this is not a policy issue, Dermot. You know that this
Sean,
is an issue
completely a policy. That's totally untrue, Sean. In fairness, with respect to you, and I do admire you. I have to say that in terms of fighting for your constituency, in terms of wanting to extend the Western Rail Corridor. But I make a prediction to you, Sean. In my lifetime and in your lifetime, you will not see an extension to the Western Rail Corridor. You will not see that. Well, what you need, and what Tuam, for example, needs, is a bus service. We're a bus service into Tuam, for example. There is no way of people getting it out. The policy of government, the Minister of Transport, who you support, and I want you to tell people live on this show today that you fully endorse the role that the Minister is playing in this dispute.
I would say that when you talk about Tuam, when you talked about the Western Rail Corridor, and I'm glad you brought it up, and I'm glad you support my submission.
We campaign for its opening, Sean.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we will work on that as well. And hopefully we will work with yourselves on it.
Can we talk a bit about that submission that you made to the National Transport Authority? And it talks about your bottom line on public transport, Sean Kenny. The programme for government, you write, that we signed up to commits to maintaining public transport and investing in services. That's our position.
That's right, Jen.
So are you conflicted then when you see these bus errand workers being asked to give up 30% of their pay?
No, I'm not conflicted, because I think what we need to do here is we need to sit down and see what actually is at the core of this problem.
Who's we, Sean?
The bus errand and management and the unions. Because
and
if you look
Department
at it, the you cannot bring the Department of Transport in.
Sean,
and the former Minister, Fianna Fáil Minister, has also said that this morning.
This is what is at stake.
Hold on a minute. This is not what is at stake. This is an issue where there's money being hemorrhaged out of a certain section which the government cannot... why is it? That's the question that needs to be answered
government
between
policy,
us there. And government policy doesn't lose money. I think if you look at it, you mentioned
6 million
there
about losses a year.
Yeah, but it's not government policy that's losing the money. No. It's the way it's
saturation
being managed.
The market.
Okay,
saturation
Eddie Malone, I want to bring you no, you no, in go, here go, and cast your eye over this
government
situation.
Government policy does lose money in the transport in the round. The sister companies in CIE. I mean, there's a route through. I think it's Nina, Ballybrophy and Limerick. Which is losing money. The Western Rail Corridor is losing money. There have been figures shown that you'd be better off paying people their taxi fares to travel in the Western Corridor, and Sean wants
that's
that extended.
True. That's not true. That's not
well,
true.
It's being subsidised to the hilt.
That's not what public service is all about, though.
Not if you have a bus service that's half a fraction of the price, for example. It's madness to be extending a railway.
But the bus air and the unions would say that the National Transport Authority granted too many licences to private operators,
correct.
Making the bus air air
and
service
and he's, Darren's right.
Unsupportable.
I think that the government is subcontracting policy decisions to the Labour Court. They did the same thing with the Gardaí and the deal that was done with the Guards, subcontracting it to the Labour Court. And what is needed in this country is a public transport policy, which has to achieve three things. One is public service obligation, that no villages and towns are left out of public service. Secondly is standards to do with safety, replacing tyres, all kinds of things that are in the safety mix. And also, I think, employment standards, driver competence and all the rest. So they're the things that a regulated public transport system would deliver for you. I do think if that public transport system was properly developed in a coherent way, a route like Dublin-Cork would not stand up. It certainly could never be subsidised, because you have a good road, you have aeroplanes and you have trains, which themselves are being subsidised. So I think that the government is failing here in its policy development for public transport.
So what are you saying? Get rid of Expressway?
I think that you'd have to look at all the expressway routes. I travelled to Donegal recently by bus,
fabulous
bus air.
Service.
It's a great service, okay? And I think that there are some routes where it doesn't make sense to subsidise bus air and to do it. And I think there's another thing happening here, which
is that... What
about
all the people with free travel? What do you do with them?
I think that bus air and should be properly compensated for that. And the same with Dublin bus.
Just that point. Come in at this point.
Same with Dublin bus. But I just want to make this final point. I think that what we're looking at here has happened before in Aer Lingus, in Umpus, in ESB and in RTE, where businesses that were developed out of a quasi-monopoly position are now having to face the reality of competition. And if you're going to introduce competition, the only way to be fair to those who were there all along is very, very good regulation. And that's another area, whether it's in garbage collection or anything else, where the government really falls down in creating the level playing field.
I never thought I'd see myself agreeing with Eddie Malloy and agree wholeheartedly with Eddie Malloy says. But in terms of the free travel, can I say this? And you asked Sean about the rail review and the submission they put in. The rail review says suggests, among other things, in relation to free travel scheme, it suggests that Irish Rail get a 40% increase in what they get from the DSP. Now, if you gave a 40% increase to Irish Rail, and indeed to Bus Éireann, here's the fact: €4.5 million Bus Éireann would receive from a 40% increase. from the DSP. So there's a role here for government in that regard, and that's not state subsidy, by the way. That's paying paying some of the fare that's free travel. And by the way, the MBIU fully supports
free travel. Just to explain to people, only 41%
of an average fare is paid for through a subvention, so the rest
of it has to be picked up by Bus Éireann.
Indeed, it does. And indeed, anecdotally, at least, drivers will tell you that the most of the people that use free travel on Bus Éireann. Private competitors either don't or don't encourage free travel. And can I just make one other point here in terms of the motorway network? Dublin Waterford is a prime example. Bus Éireann serve 10 towns between Dublin and Waterford. The private operator competing with Bus Éireann serves 2. And that's the reality here. And the public service, and against service, we're talking about a service, not a market here. We're talking about public service. And people, the workers now in Bus Éireann are being asked to stump up the bill that Shane Ross and his department would not pay.
Okay, Jim, do you want to come in there and then Louise will come back to you?
Yeah, I think it's important to note that this is not a simple industrial relations dispute here. This is a crisis involving Bus Éireann. It has financial issues. We cannot have a situation where we have a semi-detached minister. We can't have a situation where we don't have a government that is fully engaged in this issue. They need to get engaged in it. And it was astonishing during the week in the Dáil when Robert Troy and Micheál Martin questioned the Taoiseach on this. And the Taoiseach stood up solemnly and told the Dáil that the Minister for Transport had briefed the cabinet on this issue earlier that day. He hadn't even read the Grant Thornton report. The Taoiseach said to the Dáil, it got a remarkable response from the Dáil. The Taoiseach stood up and he said, the Minister for Transport hasn't read the report because he hasn't received it. Now, every journalist had it. Robert Troy had read it. In fairness to Robert Troy, he gave the Minister a copy of it. But it is not tenable for a Minister for Transport to adopt that type of an attitude to an issue which is of such seriousness.
It's hard to argue with that, Sean, isn't it?
Well, I would say, first of all, my understanding is that the report that you were talking about was a draft report. But come back to the kernel of the issue. There's a 6 million deficit in Bus Éireann, and if that continues, it's going to create a huge problem for the entire Bus Éireann network. And just come back to a few things that Dermot said. You know, talking about the NTA, they haven't issued nilly-willy licences over I think it's 8 licences they've issued since 2011, and they rejected so many more of them. But what I'm saying is that...
That's the NTA statement, not yours, Sean. The fact of the matter is, in Dublin Cork, 128% increase in capacity in 6 years. Market growth, 60%. So twice the capacity on Dublin Cork. Dublin Limerick, twice the capacity of passenger growth as well.
If the passengers weren't there, the private operators wouldn't be interested in operating on the routes.
On the contrary, Claire, again, I'll go back to the UK. Back in the 80s, exactly the same thing happened in the UK. There was a flood of operators on the motorway network. End up in a situation where some of those operators disappeared. You don't have monopolies and duopolies in the UK. And anybody that travels in the UK, and I do, on train or bus, will know it. The highest fares in Europe are in the UK. That's the policy that Sean Kenny is now supporting. That's what he's doing.
I think we need to let Sean respond, and then Louise, just let him respond to that point.
2016, I think it's 40 million of a PSO was given to...
We're talking about PSO, Sean.
And basically, you're talking about government and what they're doing. Shane Ross has gained, I think it's an extra 11% increase on that. The market is growing.
The PSO market.
And for whatever reason, Bus Éireann aren't increasing their numbers.
This is about privatisation, and it suits Shane Ross and all of the other people who sit at the cabinet table and those who are in government to make us believe that this is somehow an industrial relations dispute. I was involved in industrial relations for years. This is no more an industrial relations dispute than the man in the moon. This is about privatisation. The simple fact is that we have begun the process, in fact the last government begun the process of privatising our bus service, and that is wrong. There is a public service element within public transport, and that needs to be respected. Now, the Independent Alliance stood on a platform and were very, very clear about investing in and protecting public transport. I would like to see what they're going to do now, because this is not an issue about industrial relations. An issue about a small few drivers who might get a few shillings from overtime. That's not what this is about. This is a broader issue. It's about privatisation. The Minister, and fair play to him because he managed to brief the Cabinet on a report he hadn't read, something which I found quite shocking. You know, he has absented himself from these discussions. He thinks he can wash his hands of them and turn his back on the public transport crisis. He can't. There is a role for him. He needs to be involved in it. He needs to take charge of this situation, but he also needs to call it for what it is. This is about privatisation.
Okay.
It's not about
relations. Hold on a minute now. You're lambasting the Minister for Transport, and I must say that what's going on here is something that's totally wrong. This is not a policy issue. This is actually an
disgrace
issue.
It's a commercial problem,
and it needs to be resolved. And what I'm saying is that if we're going to resolve it, we have to sit around the table and see how we will resolve it. The Grant Thornton report highlighted the issues that are there. The CIE management have to look at it, and have to look at Bus Éireann management have to look at it and see how they will deal with it and what they're going to do.
Sean,
and they need to engage with you, the trade union.
Sorry, I just want to put this to Sean Kenny. Willie Noon from SIP2 believes that Shane Ross would rather see Bus Éireann go under than stay afloat. He says he's a happy bedfellow for Fine Gael, who previously said that Bus Éireann should have been privatised. He also went on to say that pumping money into a semi-state body goes against Shane Ross's DNA.
Well, first of all, in my discussions with Shane Ross, that's the furthest from the truth that he would be trying to privatise Bus Éireann or get rid of it. Absolutely not. And the other thing is that, and I have assurances from him on this, is that the rural connections that are there will be kept.
How's that going to happen, Sean? The NTA's toolkit, is it? Because that's what the NTA said. They have a toolkit. The NTA's toolkit consists of this, Sean. For example, and I made this example before, Dublin to Cork, before the motorway network, Bus Éireann provided a service into every single town. The motorway network came along, thankfully, good roads, competitors came in, that's okay to a point, right? Bus Éireann under pressure came out of some of those towns to compete, to try and compete with the private operators. What happened then? The policy of the government then kicked in, the NTA's toolkit kicked in, and they've now awarded a contract to a company to serve towns between Portlaoise and Cashel. That cost the taxpayer, you and me, Sean, the taxpayer, $880,000 for a 24-month contract for a service that was provided for free by Bus Éireann. No, are you supportive of that policy?
It wasn't being provided for free because it was a commercial service.
Sean,
the commercial service is there, is not working now, isn't it?
It's not working because of government policy.
Come back to Shane Ross. You're happy with how he's dealing with this?
Absolutely, and I've had discussions with him. I had discussions with him yesterday, and I met him last Tuesday. And I am very satisfied that Shane Ross is dealing with this in the best way possible. This is an issue that needs to be resolved at management level, and that's where it is.
Did you ask him to read the draft report?
Throw the walkers to the wolves, Sean.
He has read it now, has he?
Where's your social conscience?
Eddie Malloy.
No, it can't be sorted on the basis of the Grant Thornton report. The problem is that the whole public transport system needs to be addressed as a whole. You can't just look at 4 million or 6 million, whatever it is, being lost by Bus Éireann and say we've got to resolve that in a bracketed, encapsulated way. You have to take the wider picture. I mean, Dermot began by saying that the whole area is soaked in politics, and it is soaked in politics. I mentioned, for example, totally uneconomic rail links. If you talk to the CEO of Irish Rail, I talked to him a number of years ago and I saw the figures, and I said, what are you going to do about this Nina Rail, etc.? And he said, I'll keep it open provided the government keeps subsidising it. I mean, you can't treat this in isolation. And there is a need for a fully developed policy on public transport and just to go after
which
Irish Rail.
Which the unions would love to be part of.
Yeah. And just to go back on the Western Rail Corridor, I want to give you some facts as opposed to what the spin that has been put out there. The business case that was made for the Western Rail Corridor has been met. The number of people travelling from Galway to Innes in 2016 was 297,000 people. The number of people travelling on the Innes to Athenry route was 102,500, validated by Irish Rail. So therefore, it is working, it has met the business case, and anything else is spin. People are looking at figures which are out of date. Look at the 2002. Everything is being subsidised within public transport, and you know that well, including everything
except
in Dublin.
Except commercial service, though. Just be clear.
Absolutely.
Government policy is destroying that, Sean.
We'll leave that one there. We'll take a break. Dermot, you're going to leave us now. Thanks very much for coming in. Dermot O'Leary from the NBRU. J Jim O'Callaghan is still with us, Fianna Fáil. We have Minister of State Sean Canny. Louise O'Reilly is here from Sinn Féin. Eddie Molloy, who's a change management consultant, and John Downing, political correspondent with the Irish Independent. And we're going to talk a little bit about Brexit now, because some would say that a terrible reality faced the Republic of Ireland following British Prime Minister Theresa May's big speech this week, because Britain and Northern Ireland, it looks like, will be out of the EU, out of the single market, out of the customs union, and we may return to a border on this island, a physical border, because how else will all of this play out? And the concern being expressed in many of the common pieces in the papers today is that we just haven't got a strong enough voice at that negotiating table. Not that a negotiating table exists yet, because we're not allowed to talk, apparently, until that Article 50 is triggered. But Sean, are you confident that we're going to have enough of a say, given that we're the only EU member state with a land border with Britain, that we're being given enough muscle?
Well, we're a member of the European Union, and as a member of the European Union, and that's where we have to negotiate with that team. We're on that team for negotiation. I think the government are working very hard. Even before the referendum, there was pre-planning done on the basis that there may be a result that there would be Brexit. Cabinet subcommittee, Brexit subcommittee, has been set up, chaired by the Taoiseach. That has been working diligently. In fact, their next meeting is on next Thursday. It includes a Brexit unit within each department, and their meeting next Thursday. They've met. In the meantime, the All Ireland dialogue is taking place. In fact, next Monday you have Department of Transport have a full day session in Dundalk. Morning they're talking about transport, and in the afternoon they're talking about tourism. And the Minister for Education is doing a similar regional event in Dublin, all about Brexit. So, from that point of view, it is important to say that the government are doing everything they can at this stage. They are also have established the headline priorities for Ireland in these negotiations, and the number one is minimising the impact of trade and the economy, protecting the Good Friday Agreement.
How can we minimise the impact of this on us?
Well, if
what we're looking at is, or are rather, tariffs on our goods leaving here,
yes,
and going to Britain. It could have an extraordinary impact.
It could have,
and
we're speculating here until the negotiations start. But also,
Eddie,
I would
you don't
say,
think it's speculation?
No. We're not speculating. Look, let me take an example, and I'll just pluck one out of the air. If you're manufacturing Goodfellas pizzas down in Naas, probably about 40% of your output is to the UK. And already they have to meet an 18% devaluation of sterling. In other words, they've got to go into their staff and say, somehow we have to reduce costs by 18% to remain competitive in Britain. And not only that, not only will they have to deal with that drop in the value of sterling, but they will also have to pay tariffs in addition. Now, the canary in the mine here was the mushroom industry. It went overnight because of that. So it isn't just speculation. Already there is serious damage being done, especially in the agri-food sector, and it will hit other sectors as well, even in light manufacturing and engineering and all those other places, with that differential. So it's not. I think that the government is marshalling its resources, but I have a sense that they have to up it a few gears and treat it more in terms of the kind of emergency mindset that they dealt with things like foot-and-mouth threats and so on. I know they're very different, but it's of such an order of magnitude that I think that the free movement of people will be dealt with. I mean, I have a Polish guy doing some electrical work for me. He'll be free to go to Britain, and Europeans will be free to come in here and go to Britain, but they won't be able to benefit from the UK, working in the UK, UK health service and UK benefits and so on. I think that one will be dealt with. But there will be, I think talking about hard and soft border is a kind of a euphemism. There will be a border. There will be a border for the handling of goods.
I mean, it depends on who you read today. Pat Leahy talks about under-the-radar conversations going on, his piece in the Irish Times. Mandy Johnson in The Independent says that instead of plotting a deliberate political course on these very serious issues, we're content to continually drift along in a life raft, wasting time, waiting to see where the tide will bring us. Who do you believe, Jim O'Callaghan?
Well, I believe we're not prepared for it. In a couple of months, negotiations are going to start on Brexit. On one side of the table is going to be Theresa May, May and her collection of Brexiteers. We know what they want. Her speech was an Alice in Wonderland speech because the policies that they're going to try to achieve and the demands they seek, they're going to have a very negative consequence on the UK. You know, that's a matter for the UK. What concerns me is what's going to happen on this island. On the other side of the table is going to be the EU. And we have to ensure that the EU negotiators have at the forefront of their minds the concerns of this country. I think it's really important that we stick with the EU line. Like we've come to a fork in the road in terms of this country's development. Tomorrow marks the 45th year since Paddy Hillary and Jack Lynch signed our accession to the EEC. It served us well. There's now talk about maybe we need to deviate a bit to be closer to the British. We don't. We stick with the EU line.
Okay, so if we stick with the EU line, should we not be kicking and screaming and saying we are the only EU member state with a land border here? We should have our own representation at that table.
Can I just say, I don't think we should be kicking and screaming. We should be emphasising that we need support for our businesses which have been affected by Brexit. However, what I wouldn't do, and Noel Whelan suggested this, and I respect Noel's opinion, he talked about having a third representative at the table, that you'd have EU, UK and Ireland. I think that would be a dangerous precedent. I think that would allow the UK to engage in a divide and conquer mechanism. We need to stick firmly with the EU and let us not go out on our own and try and get a half a bit of where the British are going. They're going down a very dangerous road.
Can we trust that the EU negotiations will have enough capacity to deal with our very major concerns outside of their own en masse?
Well, we need to go back a step, Claire, I think, and we need to establish whether or not we can trust that the person who is representing us, who is on Taoiseach, is actually going to represent well the interests of Ireland. And when I talk about Ireland, I'm talking about the 32 counties in Ireland, because we cannot get away from the fact that 56% of people in the north voted to remain. That's cross-community support for remaining within the European Union. So we need to know, when Mary Lou MacDonald questioned the Taoiseach during the week on this, he had a list of issues, a list of concerns, and no evidence of any plan as to how he's going to address those concerns. We all know what the concerns are. I attended a protest up along the border communities against Brexit. Those people are incredibly fearful. They're fearful for their livelihoods. And Eddie is right. The mushroom industry, it went overnight. We can see that that happened very, very quickly. And yet we don't see the response from the government that they are able to act quickly. This will move quicker than I think our government is ready for. And that's very, very unfortunate. I mean, Sean said there, we need to protect the Good Friday Agreement. We need to hear from the government how they're going to protect the Good Friday Agreement. It's not good enough to say to people, we must protect the Good Friday Agreement. Sure, we all know that. Mm-hmm. We need to hear from the government how they're going to do that. And we haven't heard that yet. And that is making people in business, people who live along the border, people whose livelihood depends perhaps on trade with Britain, that's making those people very, very nervous, as well as the fact that we have the mandate in the north, which is being disrespected.
John Downey, give me your take on this. I mean, are we doing enough? Do we not have a set plan? Should we be doing more? What's your take?
Well, I tend to agree with what Eddie said. I wouldn't be dismissive or unduly critical of the effort so far, but it does need to be stepped up. It does need to concentrate far more on Brussels and the other capitals. The Taoiseach was going around the place saying, this, you know, will be decided by the elected governments of the EU. At time and place, very unhelpful thing to be saying, because the main man at the moment, the person in the gap, is Michel Barnier, and it's being handled by the Commission. And there was a big danger there that Dublin was going to alienate the negotiators very early on. There is one Irish person on the team, on Barnier's team. He is, however, an EU official. He is not an Irish representative. So there is a danger that we go in there as one of 27 sitting opposite Britain. And our voice very much needs to be heard. Theresa May's speech made no while there were reassurances about common travel area and so on, no reference to the peace process, no reference to the Good Friday Agreement, which is probably the trump card that Ireland must play, because the EU has invested very heavily in the peace process. huge peace grants and cross-border interreg grants over the last 25 years and so on. They do appreciate the importance of it.
The British government have set out what they want from these talks. We need to set out what we as a state want from the talks, whether and it'll be done through the EU. But at present, Europe and the UK is unaware as to what it is Ireland wants to achieve at the end of the Brexit process. And we need to set that out. We need to know what type of status do we want for the North. We need to know whether they would consider letting the North stay within the customs union. Like there, I listened this morning to Joe Healy and Barclay Bell, who's the leader of the Ulster Farmers Union, on the radio. They are people who are at the forefront of this issue. Now, this is going to be very damaging. There's no way around it. But we need a plan, and we need people who are at the forefront of business in this country and are going to be detrimentally affected by it, advising the government. And the government needs to set out what its objectives are.
That the All-Ireland Civic Dialogue is doing that. Also, all of the Taoiseach, the ministers and all of the diplomats are engaging with the task force that has been set up under Michel Barnier. And they're explaining exactly our position. And they're also talking to all other heads of government in the 27 states to make sure that they understand our priorities and our unique position, as you say. And it is a unique position. As we have a situation where we have a border and we have a very unique position between Northern Ireland and South of Ireland. It is very intricate. We need to make sure that we're there. We're actually working on that. We will
those
be cranking it up.
Priorities should be published, Sean. We need to know what are the priorities.
And I accept that they need to be published. But I think as well as that, what we want to make sure is that every other... We know the priorities and our unique position with Northern Ireland. We know the issue of free travel and have a special trade agreement with Great Britain on the basis of our proximity.
They have no vision for a post-Brexit Ireland, and if they have, they should share it. I don't believe they have.
We have very few minutes left, but Louise, I want to just ask you about the process in Sinn Féin over the weekend, because Gerry Adams said that Martin McGuinness's successor will be announced on Monday. That seems very quick. How does it work?
Well, firstly, I want to wish Martin and his family the very, very best. Martin has given hugely of himself and indeed his family to the creation of peace on this island. And I wish him a speedy recovery. And I look forward to the day when he comes back and of course, he will continue to play a role within our party. The Ard Cóiríolla will meet. The leadership will make a decision over who will lead us into and. Again,
so
you see,
there's no
I can hear snickering
no
now, and that to be honest with you, to be honest with you, we have a leader who is elected, Jim, as you well know, or if you don't, well, now you know, and also a deputy leader. But because of partition, we are required to have somebody to lead us in the elections in the North, and the name of that person will be announced on Monday. That's nothing funny about that, by the
way.
But
there's another process of election leading to that announcement. Who announces it?
It will be announced on Monday.
And how is it
decided?
Which
is the day after tomorrow.
How is it decided?
The Ard Cóiríolla are meeting at the moment.
And do members on the Ard Cóiríolla vote on it?
Members of the Ard Cóiríolla are elected and they will make that decision, and that will be made known on Monday.
This sounds like something from Stalinist times.
It does not. Sean, I want to address that because that kind of nonsense, actually. I mean, when I hear someone, particularly from Fianna Fáil, they don't have a deputy leader. I don't know how they structure or how their decisions are made. Our leader is elected and we all know that. Gerry Adams is elected by the Ard
Cóiríolla. Sean, go ahead.
While Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin are spatting over there, I just want to first of all wish Martin McGuinness the best of good health into the future. That's the first thing I want to say about it. I think the elections in the North are unfortunate they're happening at this time. It's an unnecessary thing, and I suppose what it shows is the fragility of any government, and that small little things can bring a government down. And I think at this stage we need to look at that and say...
Sorry, Sean, £500 billion is not a small thing.
It might be to you in government now, but it is not a small thing. We have huge issues that you were talking about before, about Brexit and about Donald Trump and all of this kind of thing. So it is important that the elections in the North are conducted in a way that is not very divisive.
OK, we are done. Our time is up. Thank you very much indeed, all of you, for coming in today. Thank you for listening, and I hope you can join me on television on Clareburn Live Monday night at 10:35. Until then, have a good weekend. Saturday with Claire Byrne was produced by Kay Sheehy. The broadcast coordinator was David Phelan, the researcher Simon Gallagher, and sound supervision was by Cara O'Hare.